everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me today. I just want to jump right in and get started because we have a very important guest and a great topic that we're going to be covering today. My guest is Peter Laufer, winner of major awards for excellence in reporting. He's an independent journalist, broadcaster, and documentary filmmaker working in traditional and new media. He's the James Wallace Chair in Journalism at the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication, and he's written many, many wonderful books. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
Oh, it's terrific to be here with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
I know that you're very busy, and you're busy doing some incredible work. Maybe we'll hear more about what you're up to right now, but I want to talk about your book, Truth Behind Food Labeling. And when I went to look at the book and to get you on the show to talk about it, I really didn't know too much about what it was about. And I finished reading it, and I was very moved, excited, scared, lots of different emotions, but I'm glad somebody's talking about it.
Well, it seems like it is necessary to talk about what the veracity is regarding the label that we see more and more, organic, on food. And that's why I felt compelled to look into it and to write the book, Organic. It's an amazing change in the last generation or so, where the amount of money that we spend in just America on groceries marked organic has skyrocketed from about $2 billion a year to this year, $30 billion. That's already a couple of more billion since the book was published last year. So wherever there's that kind of growth, the potential exists for sloppiness and worse. And that's what I found researching the book.
Now, this increase in this market, I think it reflects a lot of different things, but I know from my point of view, I want to buy organic because I like to think I'm educated. I have a background in chemical engineering. I know what toxic pesticides and herbicides are doing to our soil, to our water, to our food, to all life on Earth. And I don't want to consume those residues. I don't want them poisoning the planet. And I want to go for food the way it was intended.
Yeah, well, I think that you and I will find nothing to argue about there. I agree with those sentiments, and I think so many people do who bother to think twice about what it is they're eating. The motivation behind the book was not to question the validity or value of choosing to eat in the manner you describe, but rather to get a sense of the labeling. When we pick that box off the shelf in the supermarket because it says organic on it, because we are thinking, as you are, what does that mean? Are we getting what we expect we're getting because it says organic?
Well, most of us today, since we don't grow our own food and we don't live near someone who is growing the food so that we can see how it's done, most of us, when we get food, either when we buy it in the supermarket or we eat it in a restaurant, it's a leap of faith, really, to believe that it's good for us.
But it's really more than that, or should be, for those of us who are lucky enough to live in a country like this one where we are operating via rules. And so there is the leap of faith. And as you say, a lot of us, most of us, can't not only grow our own foodstuffs in adequate supply to take care of ourselves. We might live in a climate where it's not possible to do that year round. But in addition to that, we're engaged in other activities. And so when we decide to buy something and it has a certain label on it, we should have an expectation and a confidence that it is what it says it is.
Yeah, we should. We like to think we're civilized, but a lot of things can go wrong, as you show in your book. So your book starts out as a journey to find out about two particular products you've purchased. One is a bag of rancid walnuts, and another is a can of beans that are labeled organic, and you wonder how they got to your shelves, if they're really from where they say they're from, and you end up traveling the world to learn more about organic certification and where those foods and other foods come from.
Yeah, well, because we are this nation of laws, then we have regulations. And if a product says USDA organic on it, that's supposed to mean that it meets certain standards that the government sets that we all endorse because the government is us, and that we should have a sense of confidence in that. When I looked at the labels on those two products you cite that I deal with in the book, they indicated that the beans came from Bolivia and the nuts came from Kazakhstan. Well, those are two of the most corrupt places on Earth. There's nothing to say about it other than that regarding both government and business. So it immediately made me skeptical, and I thought that would be a good way to enter into this world and get a sense of how much we can trust the labels.
So just from a story point of view, you travel to Austria, to Italy, to Costa Rica, to Tunisia, to Bolivia, and there are wonderful stories and the individuals that you connect with. We love stories about food and reading about good food and eating good food, but there's a lot more to it, learning about the different countries' processes for certifying and verifying organic. And everywhere you went, it seemed there were a lot of holes.
Well, especially right here at home. And the concern that I have after doing the research and after being able to enjoy the adventures is very basic. As your listeners or many of them may know, when you look at the label of something that's labeled organic, there is a citation of the third-party certifier that is supposed to give you the confidence, because they've handled the inspections, that the product is, in fact, organic. Well, the initial worry that we all should have, I believe, is the way the system is set up. These third-party certifiers, for the most part, are for-profit companies, and they are in competition with each other, seeking contracts with the companies they're certifying. And then here is where the conflicts of interest really, or the potential for them, really need to be spotlighted. These companies are paid for that service by the very places that they're certifying. So the opportunity for some wink, wink, nod, nod, some outright graft for sloppiness is real.
I know what some of the reactions are when people hear this. One is, why should I bother buying organic if I can't be certain it is organic? Another reaction is for those farms that may or may not be certified organic, that are organic, why should or shouldn't they be certified if the process is so wrought with problems?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure how wrought it is with problems as much as with potential problems. And that's where the citation of the $2 billion to $30 billion is worth noting. When something is growing that fast, then the opportunity to perhaps not go by the book or just to mess up it increases. It has to. And when the environment changes, when your local down at the corner mom and pop leftover from the late 60s organic natural food grocery store gets replaced by Costco and Walmart, and Costco and Walmart are the two biggest retailers of organic in America today, no matter what you may think about Whole Foods. When that starts to happen in an environment where, to be gracious, sloppiness, and to be cynical, graft is likely, then there is cause for concern.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what to do about it. But let's jump to some of the countries you visited, because I really love some of the stories that came out of it. And one of them really had me rolling when I read about you being in Tunisia and you visited an olive farmer who invited you to dinner. I'm a vegan, and many of my listeners are very plant-based, and you explained that you didn't eat meat, and it was like right out of the Greek wedding movie with Andrea Martin when she says, "What, you don't eat meat? That's okay, I'll make lamb."
Yeah, it was really great fun. He said, I said, "I don't eat meat," and he said, "We will eat couscous with no meat." And I said to him, "That sounds great. I love couscous." And he said, "We will eat couscous with no meat. We will eat couscous with sheep."
That really does happen.
It really did happen. But he was a very gracious host. And when I suggested that sheep are, in fact, meat, he had his chef cook up just a gorgeous bounty with the most lovely vegetables imaginable. It was terrific to be in a third world environment, because I am showcasing problems in Kazakhstan and Bolivia, two third world countries. I know for some people that designation is politically incorrect, but it really is the third world. I would hazard a guess that a lot of people that don't want to hear the word third world haven't been in the third world, or if I may, as the writer Paul Thoreau calls it, the turd world. But I wanted to make sure that I do everything I could to make this as balanced a proposition as possible. And that's why I was so pleased to go to Tunisia and see this spectacular farm where the most gorgeous produce was grown, and this exquisite olive oil was created by this fellow who really is a poet of food, just a wonderful man.
I was in Tunisia once, and the thing that struck me the most is where I was very poor, and I was struck by the low quality of all of the buildings that people were living in, but there were clementine trees everywhere, ripe with this luscious fruit. And I kept thinking, this place is so rich, and they don't even realize what wealth they have.
Yeah, I'm not sure they don't realize it, but one thing made me realize being there, and also living in Oregon and California, is that those of us in these climates are lucky enough to be able to pick and choose and have the opportunity to, if not know the growers, at least have confidence often in the retailers knowing the growers. But if you're in the northern tier of this country, if you're up in Duluth or Bemidji or the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where it seems like it's winter every month except mm-hmm. July, the environment is different. And that's when the trust really is needed. And if the produce is being flown in from Chile and Mexico, aside from whatever concerns you may have about the appropriateness of using natural resources so that you can whimsically eat raspberries in the middle of winter, but when it's coming in from a distance like that, then the importance of the validity of the label really becomes consequential, because if you can't trust the label, then it's meaningless.
Now, you talked about a number of large organizations, Trader Joe's for one, and then some government organizations, the USDA, and they're all so large that things very easily get lost. And there's, I think many people, maybe they're not incompetent, but they just don't want to go the lengths to really get information that people want, and you were asking them all.
It's more insidious than that, if I may interrupt. Excuse
yes, please.
Me. As I try to make clear in the book, with Trader Joe's, there is this bizarre dichotomy. You go into the place and the rock and roll music is on the box there, and you're dancing around the aisles, and they have all of this great stuff like the popcorn made with olive oil and the bargain wines. But that seeming openness and embracement of the consumer is a charade. It is one of the most closed companies in terms of offering information about where it sources its products as is imaginable. Trader Joe's is not only not transparent, it's not translucent, it's opaque. You cannot see beyond that 1960s rock and roll music and the guys and gals in their flowery Hawaiian shirts. And as I make clear in the book, the company is owned wholly by Aldi, which is a Germany-based discount supermarket chain along the lines of Costco, and the holding company also is completely closed door. So if you want to know more than just the glib copy that's up on the blackboards there at Trader Joe's or on their labels about where the products came from, the door will be slammed in your face just as it was in mine.
Do you think they always were this evil, or did they get so large and powerful that it just corrupted them like power usually does?
Yeah, I'm not sure evil is the right word, but certainly closed. And yes, it is their corporate culture and has been from the beginning. The company is built on proprietary secrets and not informing the public. And in the case of the walnuts, misinforming the public.
Well, it can be downright dangerous. I know personally because I have a relative who has celiac disease, and when her mom repeatedly asked Trader Joe's about where products came from, the door was definitely closed, so she can't buy food there.
Well, and there's no reason, I would hope, that one would want to buy anything from a place that isn't telling you where they got it, whether it's the hardware store or the food store, but particularly when it's the food store, and this is what you're eating for your health and happiness, then it's absurd for us to be told that it's none of our business where stuff came from.
So what should we be doing with regard to Trader Joe's? Should we not be buying there, or should we be writing them a lot of letters, or both?
I don't think Trader Joe's could care less how many letters you or I or all your listeners combined write to them. They're a phenomenally successful company. This is their business plan, and I can't imagine that they're going to change it. What to do about shopping there? Who knows? The stuff is a bargain. Mm-hmm. There's some really tasty stuff there. It's actually kind of fun to go into the store, usually when it's not too crowded. And probably most of the stuff is what it says it is. But I sure have a hard time shopping there since I did this investigation.
Right. Well, before your book, I started to have some tainted feelings about things that were going on now, and now they're even more tainted.
Sorry.
But fortunately, I have choices. Not everyone has choices, but a lot of us do. And I personally want to support companies that I believe in. I believe in their mission. I believe in the quality of their product. And we need truth behind labeling to find out who those companies are.
Yeah, and some of us are, as you say, lucky enough to be in a position to make these kinds of choices. There's a Trader Joe's about 2 miles from where I'm sitting right now in Marin County in California talking to you. Two blocks away, there's a locally owned food emporium that is just magnificent, the size of a typical kind of Whole Foods place, but completely locally owned. And every piece of produce in there is labeled with the name of the farm and the mileage from the store to the farm. And if something if there's some question about the origin of the food, for example, they sell meat there, and so the beef will be labeled grass fed only if it's in pasture land where there are no weeds, and so they're extraordinarily precise, and it doesn't hurt their business at all. This place is open from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. or something like that, and it is jammed day and night. It's a phenomenal success, and I think that's an indicator of how people like you and your listeners will respond with their pocketbooks if you're getting what you want. It's a little pricier over there, but most of us go there to support it and because it is giving us what we seek.
Well, in today's world, we definitely have the technology that can trace every food and every ingredient that's in a box. You mentioned in your book that in Austria there are some companies that have food that you can trace back to where they came from. And I'm thinking about the courier companies. We can trace packages where they came from, where they stopped along the way. We just need some slick coders, and we could know where everything came from, which we do to some extent, like at that one store you mentioned. And I remember when mad cow disease came out, there was more focus on determining where meat came from. With so much foodborne illness going on today, it could be beneficial to have that traceability. And that's something that we should have on all food at this point.
Yeah, except in the environment that we have here, the type of capitalism we practice, the regulatory agency in question, which is the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, National Organic Program, the NOP, is serving business at least as much as it's serving the rest of us, and maybe more. And it is the position of the USDA that if companies like Trader Joe's or others decide that the origin of their products is a proprietary business tool, then they are successfully able to hide behind that claim and not tell you where something you're going to buy and eat came from.
Yeah, and we see that especially with animal agriculture. They may not use the word proprietary, but things are secret, and the companies that are raising animals in confinement don't want you to see what they're doing inside. Lots of secrets, too many.
Too many secrets, exactly. And it seems that this, if there is some activism to be engaged in, this is a place to focus energy, and that is to foment a movement toward transparency, so that something as simple and straightforward as knowing for sure where what you're eating came from and under what conditions it was grown or otherwise developed and processed, that seems as if it should be a basic right in a society such as ours, and that the business interests of the companies involved regarding the origin should be secondary to our interests as consumers, knowing what it is we are eating and where it came from.
Now, you're interested in organic food. I'm interested in organic food. It's a small portion of the food market. I'm imagining that I hate using the word conventional food because it's not conventional, but the industrial food that isn't organic, I'm imagining that it's worse when it comes to transparency.
Yeah, I think that you're probably correct, because as the proponents of the National Organic Program like to remind me, the reality is that there is a lot of regulation at work. And if you trust the players along the way, then there is more attention to how the organic products are brought to market than the so-called conventional products. That is true. But even that is a bit twisted. Isn't it strange how it is that we certify supposedly and mark organic food, but if you're spraying it with something that maybe you don't want to eat, there's no skull and crossbones on the box of so-called conventional food?
Yeah, that's the craziest thing out there. But I guess it comes from when the whole pesticide, herbicide movement began after World War II, we really believed in better living with chemistry. And we believed...
Some of us, yeah.
Some
right.
of us, yeah. I went to work for DuPont, my first job out of college. I believed.
Well, that's quite the turnaround that you have made.
Yeah. Yes, I don't believe anymore. I mean, chemicals are important. We're made of chemicals, but there are good chemicals and there are bad chemicals. And when we use them to destroy the life around the stuff we're growing, we're destroying a lot more than what we intend to. That's the damage with pesticides and herbicides today. Another thing that scared me in your book, when there are different shades of organic.
Well, there certainly are different definitions, and there are there are compounds that are permissible under the National Organic Program policies and that are not so-called organic and can be in something with the USDA organic label on it. And the decisions about that are made with heavy influence from industry.
And I don't remember in the book if this happened in the United States or not, but I imagine it can, that there are some distributors that are aware of the 95% rule and will knowingly add a little bit of conventional product in with the organic to make more money.
Well, they're knowingly, probably, but more than that, it, again, the potential is for sloppiness. If a company is 50% conventional, 50% organic, or more likely 90% conventional, 10% organic, just trying to take advantage of some of the opportunity out there to make some more money. How carefully are they segregating the two market segments? And who's watching over that? And if they're being inspected a couple of times a year, often superficially, is that noticed if that separation isn't complete? These are the kinds of problems that exist potentially if you think that it's important to have organic as your diet.
Well, I do.
Yes.
And some people will say that you're concerned, you're privileged in being concerned about organic food when there are so many people who don't have enough food, who live in food deserts or can't afford organic food. And my personal feeling is my first priority in where my dollars go. I don't make a lot of money. I live on a very modest income, but I believe in buying quality food, organic food. I want to support those businesses so that they can grow and provide more for other people and make it more affordable.
Yeah, and we are so extraordinarily privileged, even those of us who are not wealthy. And that's one of the problems also is the markups are perhaps unnecessary and certainly heinous in many respects, where some of this stuff costs twice as much because it has the organic label on it and you're being told that you can't find out where it came from.
All right. So just after you've learned all you've learned all over the world about what's going on with organic food and labeling, what did you learn and what can you recommend we do?
I think it's basic. And part of it is based on privilege. If we're lucky enough to live in a place, as I am here in California, relatively adjacent to the producers and have an opportunity year-round to have food that is grown locally, adjust my diet a little bit so I don't find myself compelled to be eating blueberries in February, and shop at stores where I feel a comfort that efforts have been made to secure the veracity of the products as they're labeled, then those are the kinds of steps we can take. Who are our retailers? Are we confident in our retailers that they are doing their due diligence? When possible, do we know the producers? When it's the right time of year, can we get to a farmer's market where we can meet with the farmer and have a sense of community and enjoy that process, but also feel confident that she or he is doing that which should be done so that the food is what they say it is. But unfortunately, for the vast majority of the population, those things are not possible based on the time that they have for shopping, based on where they live, based on their climate. And that's why we have regulatory agencies, and that's why we should be able to trust what the label says.
Yeah, should. There are so many regulations that are out there that are not being upheld, and those that break it aren't being punished appropriately, not just with organic foods, but so many regulations we have. And part of it is because the organizations don't have the funding to carry out what they're supposed to. You said that for the certification of organic food, there's something like one inspector for $1 billion of product, something like that?
Yeah, although in the last Farm Bill, which was passed since the book went to press, a relative bunch more money has been allocated to the National Organic Program. Now, a lot of that is for marketing purposes because the USDA in the National Organic Program is basically in the business of promoting organic food. But nonetheless, there will be some more money. But yes, it's extraordinarily underfunded. It perhaps isn't as bad as it was in the Upton Sinclair days of the jungle, but it's pretty bad.
Well, you were concerned about the conflict of interest going on with the certifiers certifying farms for organic food. The USDA is a conflict of interest within itself.
Well, one could argue that because it's the USDA both engaged in marketing and in inspection, and it's also the USDA that's certifying these inspectors, these certification companies, to be able to certify.
Now, you ended the book talking about the rancid walnuts from
Kazakhstan.
And had you heard more since you finished the book from
yes,
the USDA?
Yes, I received the USDA a heavily redacted report on the correspondence that they had that determined how they ascertained that, in fact, those nuts were not organic. I have appealed via Freedom of Information Act request the redacted report to get more information. But again, unfortunately, that report is an example of how the USDA in the National Organic Program response to my requests has been serving industry, not you and your listeners going to the market.
Yeah, I mean, that piece alone is chilling. And all of the questions you asked them at the end of your book, I think were pretty standard questions any customer would ask a vendor who was providing them a product that wasn't up to specification.
Yeah, where did this stuff come from and how did you find out that it wasn't what you said it was?
And what are you going to do to prevent it in the future? I mean, these are classic standard industry type of customer service vendor relation questions.
And your government says to you, none of your business. It's their business.
None of your business. Whew. Okay, well, I look forward to an update on what happens with that report, what you get and what comes out of it. What are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on the paperback edition, and in fact, that will be in the paperback edition of the book Organic, where I will have an afterword that will go through this process that I'm in right now with the USDA, trying to get them to explain those questions that you just noted.
You have is it a blog or an article called Slow News?
Yeah, it's a book that I wrote, another book that I wrote that deals with maybe slowing down a tad regarding the 24-hour news cycle so that we can, as is the case here with the organic question, get a little more information and have time to, so to speak, digest it.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up, because this is such an important topic. It's not something that we talk about in a soundbite and then move on. So a lot of information we need to learn, we need to digest, like you said. I liked the parallel you made where we get empty news, just like we're consuming empty calories. Everything's just a quick fix, and we're paying a terrible price for it.
We are, but we can turn this around, and that's
Yay.
The good news, and that's why what the work that you do is so valuable.
Okay, last question, and that is, do you have some favorite delicious organic plant foods that you love?
A lot of them, I guess. This place down the street that I told you about, the Food Emporium, makes a wonderful something for breakfast, which is a burrito with tofu and fresh vegetables in it, and I'm a sucker for it, despite the fact that it costs $6.98 painful cents. And as I said earlier, I'm conflicted because of this of so-called organic popcorn at Trader Joe's made with olive oil. That it's very hard to just buy one bag, and then it's very hard not to eat the whole bag.
You have to make your
sure.
own. You get some wonderful olive oil from your friend in Tunisia,
That's right, and make the popcorn myself from popcorn that I buy from a farmer down the street.
It'll be even more addicting. You could package it and sell it, and maybe, who knows, this could be an incredible product for you.
There you go. Well, it's just been grand having the opportunity to talk about this with such a sympathetic audience and questioner, and it's terrific that you continue to share with your audience.
Thank you all. I love the book, and I know my listeners are passionate about this topic too, and we all want to make a difference, help this make this world a better place, and we need brave people like you going all around the world to find the truth. So thank you for that.
A pleasure. Thank you, and I look forward to being in touch.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Let's move on, shall we? Well, that was really something. And, I put out a list a few weeks ago about my best of 2014, and I'm glad the paper book for this book is coming out, and it'll probably come out this year, so I can put that on my best of 2015 list since I didn't read it before 2015. But this is a really important book, and the stories, well, I love traveling, and a lot of people love reading and hearing about stories from other countries. There were stories in the book about Costa Rica. I love Costa Rica, and I have some property there, actually. And I know many people that live there primarily for the food and to grow food, because things grow like crazy there. But just like anywhere, there are the regulations, there are the people trying to get away with things, and you really can never be too sure unless you physically go to where the food comes from and talk to the people who are making it. And that's a really challenging thing. And if any people have the opportunity to do that and travel to different places, it would be great if we could share some of that information. And I'm thinking we need to do some more activism here. I don't buy lots of things in Trader Joe's, but just as we were talking about before, there are, like, I think we, those of us who know the store, we have our own particular products that we're particularly fond of, and there, some of the things are really affordable. So it's really hard to not shop there. I'm in quite a dilemma right now. What am I going to do about that? And something that breaks my heart is people that are growing food, growing healthy food, growing organic healthy food, maybe in other countries. I don't know what the right term is to call the not first world, the not developed world countries. But the people that aren't making a livable wage to grow the food that we eat, this is heartbreaking. So there are so many levels behind the food that we eat, whether it's grown organically or whether it's grown contaminated with herbicides and pesticides, and is there blood on it? Are the people that are growing it or harvesting it, are they treated well? Can they send their children to school? And it's really hard to know this information. And when the organic certification was coming out, there were people that wanted to tie this element into the certification. And, of course, we don't have that. They thought it would be important to leave that out and maybe have it be something else. So we have these fair trade certifications now. And how do we get it all to be combined and work together so that we know that the food we have is healthy, it's been grown in a sustainable way, it's been grown by people that are treated treated well, and it's really quite a conflict. I'm probably going to go to Trader Joe's. There's some things that that aren't their products, things that are in other stores that I probably could get there for a little less. So I might go there for that. And I like to think that I'm a smart shopper, where I'm always looking for the best value. And so where I was going before is there are some foods that are expensive, and maybe they're expensive because they are offering the people that are creating the food a better wage. Or maybe they're just highly marked up, and it's really hard to differentiate what the price is. Is it just a high markup for a small group of people, or is it because they're really covering all the expenses that are involved to make that food? So when I'm thinking I'm a smart shopper and I'm looking for the best price, I'm looking at some standard brands, like a few canned foods. I don't buy a lot of canned foods anymore because of all the BPA and the plastic linings, and that's a whole other problem. But I look for the best price of a brand that I can get in a number of places, and I choose the place that has the lowest price. But that may not apply to all kinds of food. It's really hard. So we do have some options for people that can get their produce, for example, from a CSA. And that's like an ideal way, because you normally have the opportunity to talk with the farmers, visit them, visit their farm, and see what they're doing. You have a lot more opportunity to be a part of the enterprise itself that's making your food. And here in New York, we have a winter where it's hard to grow anything. But some things still grow, actually, especially if you're doing it and you're knowledgeable about food and doing it in a sustainable way. But I just joined a winter share, and it's from November, December, January, February. Yeah, the last winter share is in February. And this has been really fun because I've gotten tons of organic sweet potatoes, turnips, onions, all those root vegetables, carrots, and kale, my favorite food. And kale can actually grow way into the winter, which is a beautiful thing because those greens are so important. So there are ways. I wish that we would use our agricultural schools to study how to grow food organically, more efficiently, more healthfully, sustainably with the soil, rather than concentrating on how to concentrate animals in factories and grow them efficiently for food. We have a lot of opportunity to get better at doing what's good for the planet, and we just have to insist on it, which is a bit of a challenge, isn't it? So I was very inspired by this book, Frustrated and Inspired, and I really encourage you to read it. If you have any stories, local stories from farmers in your area, or if you've traveled places and learned things about some food producers, I would love to hear about them. It's always fascinating to me when I travel to different places to see how the food is grown. That's one of the things that interests me most, and I love to see the passion, people that really believe in the earth and know it like it has a soul. And it's sad that we've gotten so far away from something that's so important to our own lives. All right, I want to believe this is going to turn around, and it is going to turn around, and that's why we're talking about it. That's why you're listening, and we want more truth behind our food labeling. We need to be able to trace where these foods are coming from. We need more connection between the people who are making our food, the people who are distributing our food, the people that are profiting from the sales of our food, and us who are getting to eat it. And then there are so many other layers, like I said before, there are so many layers that are involved in food. Once we figure out where our food is coming from and we trust what it is and what's in it and how it was made and how it was distributed, what are we packaging in it? What are we packaging it with to travel from one place to another? Is it stored at an appropriate temperature so that it doesn't go rancid or doesn't go bad? How are they being treated if you're buying food from another country that's brought into this country? There's all kinds of regulations about the fruit that's allowed to be brought into this country and what it needs, what needs to happen to it, which is why I tend to stay away for the most part from imported fruit, tropical fruit. And then there's the packaging, and I'm kind of in a panic these days. You've heard me talk about plastic before, and we're learning more and more about how devastating plastic can be. And plastic, these plastics that are used for packaging, they are more problematic when they're exposed to UV radiation and heat. And these are things we don't know until we receive a product. We don't know where they've been. We don't know how they've been handled. We don't know what kind of life the plastics have experienced to know how they've degraded along the way. So many things to think about. It's overwhelming. And I don't really want to get wrapped up in the fear or the scary part about it, because it is kind of scary. I want to focus on the positive and inspire myself and everyone else to do something about it. When talking to Peter Lauver, he was saying he didn't seem to think that letters to Trader Joe's would matter. And maybe they won't, but if they received 100,000 or 200,000 letters starting to complain about some of their tactics, maybe they would listen. So if you are motivated to talk to the managers of those stores or managers of any store that you buy from, I think it's important to let the managers know, the owners know of the stores that you shop in, what's important to you. They should know. Sometimes they don't know. Sometimes they don't know as much as you do about food, and you can be educating them and then educating everybody else. We're continually looking for products in our local stores that just aren't there, and you have to tell them sometimes, hey, there's a new product out. Can you get it? And this way we can help support the products we believe in, and the others can just go away. Go away. So what do you think? Do you believe in organic food? Do you believe in the labeling? I mean, we've seen the nightmares involved with trying to get genetically modified foods labeled, and we're not even talking about that. We're talking about the labels we already have and how to have confidence that they mean what they say they mean. And another item that was in the book that I was just wondering about is the, you know, those little stickers that are on food, and nobody likes those little stickers, those little things that are stuck on your fruit that you have to peel off or on your vegetable, and they say that they're organic. What's in the glue that's in those stickers? How do we know that's okay? It's crazy. Crazy stuff. All right. We just have, just a few more minutes. And I wanted to talk before we go about a new study that came out that brought up a lot of ideas in my head. So the Journal of American College of Cardiology just had a study where they reviewed people over 20 years, and they're reviewing a variety of people, and what they were studying was something called healthy obesity. Now, these two words, do they go together? Do they not go together? What they studied was that what they found out over 20 years, and this is the first study that's relatively long-term, there weren't a lot of people in the study. Maybe, I think they started with about 2,500 people with 66 that were considered obese. But they discovered that healthy obese adults, and healthy in the term of metabolic health, cholesterol, triglycerides, blood pressure, fasting glucose levels, and insulin resistance. This is what they were measuring. They found that healthy obese adults were nearly 8 times more likely to progress to an unhealthy obese state after 20 years than the healthy non-obese adults. And there were many of us that believed that when you're carrying extra weight for lots of different reasons, you are degrading your own health. And this is one of the first studies that's kind of demonstrating that this is indeed true. But there are many different ways to look at the results. And one of the ways to look is to think of those obese adults who still were healthy after 20 years, still had good health assessment from cholesterol, triglycerides, blood pressure, fasting glucose, and insulin resistance. And it shows us that the human body is incredible. It can withstand so much abuse, environmental abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse, and nutritional abuse. And it is so resilient. And I find inspiration in that. You know, there are many people that say, oh, my God, that guy, I don't believe in healthy eating or whatever because I know somebody who lived till 100 or 110, and he smoked, he drank, he ate milk and meat and all this stuff. Yeah, there are always a handful of people like that. And, again, it demonstrates the amazing resiliency of the human body. So what I take from all of that is this. If the body is so amazingly resilient. Imagine if we treated it the best that we possibly could, fed it the most nutrient-dense food, and we did all of the good things to make us healthy. Can you imagine what we could accomplish, how long we could live feeling great? It's just really exciting to know what our possibilities are. The body is so tough, and it can bounce back, too, and feel good and energized. So those folks who weren't treating their bodies so well along the way, some healthy, obese adults that became unhealthy, let's say, or just people that are slightly overweight, or those people that have a relatively good weight but inside they're not healthy, just switching, changing your diet and eating the right foods at any stage of your life, the body is so forgiving and can turn around and make you feel better and clean and energized and extend your life and improve the quality of life. And I find that so inspirational. And the way our society works is that we need to have studies and we need to have data, even though there are some things that we know instinctually, I can't talk today. I don't know why any word over two syllables is just getting stuck. Could be because I am a little tired and didn't get enough sleep because I was reading this wonderful book to be ready for today, The Truth Behind Food Labeling. But my point is that the body is so resilient. And, you know, if you've made some New Year's resolutions and you want to improve your health, or you've been trying for a long time and you're still struggling, stick with it. You can do it. We can all do better. And our bodies will just thank us for us and feel really good, because that's all I really want. I want everybody feeling good. And the last thing I want to mention is, I think I might have mentioned it last week, but I'm very excited. We have a brand new web series, and we've launched the first episode, and I hope you'll go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and check it out. It's a combination of a news program, a local business feature, and a food show. It's been really fun to make, and I look forward to doing more in the future. I hope you like it. Please give it a look and let me know what you think at info@realmeals.org. Well, thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this program, and please pick up a copy of Truth Behind Food Labeling. Maybe you want to wait for the paperback to come out by Peter Laufer, but it's a very, very important book. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Have a delicious week. Bye-bye.